We know the present importance of Hanukkah to the Christian world. As long as Jews were tucked away from the Christian world, Hanukkah was a very minor celebration. But once we became part of the larger world, once our youth saw Christmas and felt left out of Christmas gifts, Hanukkah grew in importance. In the medieval world, Hanukkah had very little public significance. There was no synagogue liturgy for Hanukkah in the shtetl. Nor was any student dismissed for a midweek or midwinter Hanukkah vacation. There was no Hanukkah cantata in the ghetto. Children did not receive presents. Hanukkah was simply a home holiday during which the menorah was lit according to ancient prescriptions and blessings were recited, praising God for the miracle which he had performed in those days and which he continues to perform. And that was it. If we go back further to the period in which the Talmud was written, we find that Hanukkah was even less significant as a holy day. Until many times it was common practice in schools on the day before each holiday for a master and his students to discuss the laws pertaining to the occasion. The distillation of these discussions became the basis for the various tractates of the Talmud. There is one called Rosh Hashanah, New Year, one called Yoma, the tractate which deals with Yom Kippur. For the holiday of Sukkot, there is one called Sukkot, so on. But there is no tractate for Hanukkah. At the ancient academies, the observances, customs, and rituals of Hanukkah were simply not discussed. There are only occasional, almost incidental references to Hanukkah in the Talmud, except for one occasion, when we unexpectedly come across a description of a scene which is difficult for us to credit because it seems so simplistic. There seems to have been a discussion in a graduate school of Judaism, which had been recorded in the tractate we call Shabbat, the laws concerning the Sabbath. One of the graduate students at the time asked a question we might expect from a first grader here at the temple. My Hanukkah. What is Hanukkah all about? How do we observe Hanukkah? The answer that the senior professor gives is the one that you know, that every one of us knows. It begins with the fact that in the second pre-Christian century, Palestine and West Asia were governed by an empire called the Seleucid Empire. It was one of the empires created by the generals of Alexander the Great after his premature death. Seleucus had been one of Alexander's major commanders. The fifth of the Seleucid line was a man we know as Antiochus Epiphanes. He inherited an empire which included what is today Lebanon, Syria, Israel, and Jordan. This king Antiochus was an ambitious man. Around the years 170-169 before the Common Era, he set out to attack and to conquer Egypt. He beat the local Egyptian lord, but he was unsuccessful because a new power had intruded into the area, the Romans. The Roman legate in Egypt intervened and forced Antiochus to retreat. Frustrated and bitter, most of all fearful that the city-states and small nations which made up his empire would sense his weakness and begin to rebel, Antiochus ordered each of these states and small kingdoms to take loyalty oaths. The form of the ancient loyal oath was to erect in their temples an idol of Zeus Olympius, the patron god of Antiochus, and to offer sacrifices to this god. In most of the city-states, this was not a difficult task. Their pantheon included many gods. To another, it was a simple thing. But for the Jews, such sacrifices were another matter. Our people were burdened with the second commandment. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, nor any manner of likeness of anything that is in the heavens above, or in the earth beneath, or in the waters under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down to them, nor serve them. For Jews to sacrifice to an idol was an impossibility. But by force and through the agency of several quislings, an idol was introduced into the temple in Jerusalem. The Jews became restive and rebellious, so much so that Antiochus felt that he had to proscribe their national cult, Judaism, and he did so. He prohibited the observance of the Sabbath. He prohibited the ritual act of circumcision. He prohibited the ordination of Jewish sages. He prohibited the teaching of Torah. Then there was open rebellion, led by a provincial priest by the name of Mattathias, who had five sons, including Judah. They were the future heroes of the revolt, whom we call the Maccabees. According to this conventional story, a story which has been retold ever since, the Maccabees fought first as guerrillas in the hills, and then after a number of victories and after a larger number of Judeans had flocked to their sides, when they felt strong enough to take the field against Antiochus' Assyrian troops, they defeated them in a number of battles and ultimately conquered Jerusalem. They recaptured the Temple Mount and forced the Syrians and their quislings into Jerusalem's impregnable fortress, the Acra, and laid siege to them there. The Judeans set about immediately to reopen the sacrificial cult in the temple and to rededicate the altar so it could be used. Their attention fell on the great seven-branched menorah, the great light of the temple, which requires specially mollified oil. Apparently, there was an insufficient supply, only enough to burn for one day, and it took 8 days to prepare the oil in the proper manner. Yet somehow, by a miracle, the one-day supply lasted for 8 days. Therefore, our eight-branch menorah, therefore the eight lights. This is the miracle that was performed, the miracle that symbolizes God's redemptive concerns for his people. That's the story as told in the Talmud. I'm afraid it is what we have all been taught. There's only one trouble. It doesn't quite fit the historical facts. How did the Talmud come to mix up its facts? The Talmud was edited finally in the 5th and 6th centuries, a long time ago, and it contains much earlier material. But it was edited 8 to 9 centuries after the Maccabean revolt. What I read to you comes from a part of the Talmud set down in the 3rd and 4th centuries by the Tanaim, the Palestinian sages, still half a millennium after the event. So you must always remember that 4 or 5 centuries intervened between the revolt of the Maccabees and the setting down of their traditions in the Talmud by a Tana. The very fact that as a graduate student who asked a simplistic question, "My Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah?" suggests how new the theme was at the time. If we look at the traditions about the Maccabean victories between the time of great rededication of the temple in 164 before the Common Era and the Talmudic text written 5 centuries later, we find that not a single text in our possession refers to this miracle of the cruse of oil. We find instead that those who lived nearer the time of these events were unaware of the reasons for calling Hanukkah a feast of light. The great Jewish historian of the 1st century CE, Josephus, describes the Maccabean revolt and the rededication of the temple. These are epochal events in Jewish history. He speaks of a Hanukkah which he calls the Feast of Dedication, the Feast of Lights, and he confesses that he does not know why it is called the Feast of Lights. When we press further back in time, we find, interestingly, a document, probably unknown to the rabbis of the Talmud, because it had already been suppressed by their predecessors. A chronicle written by the court historians of the Hasmoneans, the descendants of the Maccabees, who created a dynasty which ruled over Jerusalem and Judea for about 100 years after the original victory of Antiochus' troops. This book of Maccabees, this dynastic chronicle, now appears in the Apocrypha, books which were deliberately hidden away by Jews and not included in the Bible. The word Apocrypha is a Greek word which means the hidden books. And these books were maintained by early Christians for the very reason that they were not maintained so by Jews. In this document, which is an authentic history of the time, written about a generation after the events, we find a very different explanation of Hanukkah. According to the Book of the Maccabees, when Judah and his troops conquered Jerusalem in late summer and early fall of 164 before the Common Era, they entered the temple, found it desecrated, filthy, and unusable. They went through what can only be called a funeral service for the sacrificial altar. They felt that the altar had been desecrated. So one by one, they took down the stones of the holy altar and buried them. We put on sackcloth and ashes, the garments of mourning, and sang kinnot, lamentations, eulogies, the funeral hymns of the day. They went through a funeral service for the sacredness of the temple that had been, and they buried that which had been defiled. And then they began to plan how they would reconsecrate the sanctuary. Now there was a priestly tradition. When the first temple had been consecrated by the prophet Samuel, he ordered there be a festival of dedication, Hanukkah, which would last for 8 days. The time was to be used for the lighting of the great menorah in the sanctuary, a time for singing of songs and the offering of sacrifices. There was also another later priestly tradition which describes how King Hezekiah, in the 8th pre-Christian century, went to cleanse and purify the sanctuary of various chapels which had been added there by the foreign queens of Judean kings, foreigners who had brought their priests and idols to Jerusalem. First, Hezekiah had consulted a prophet. The prophet told him that the ceremony of dedication should last for 8 days, and he celebrated this ceremony with sacrifices and psalms as a service of rededication. The 8 lights of Hanukkah may represent the 8 days which the ancient priestly practice stipulated as a ritual requirement for the rededication of a sanctuary. Having determined that the festival should last for 8 days, the Jews of Maccabean times felt it important to determine the day on which the festival should take place. They reminded themselves that 4 years earlier, on the 25th of Kislev, the idol Zeus Olympios, the hated idol of the abominations, had been set up. They decided to cancel that act by holding a great service of rededication on the very day, the very anniversary of this defilement 4 years earlier. So there's a considerable time between the reconquest of the temple and the service of rededication. There was no reason that the Judeans could not have prepared whatever oil they required. The miracle of the myth of the miracle of the cruse of oil is patently a pious legend, created much later in the 3rd or 4th centuries of the Common Era, for reasons that I will suggest to you in a moment. The original Hanukkah was a ceremony in the sanctuary. The great ceremony of thanksgiving and rededication was celebrated annually, and over the years became a memorial to the freedom of the Judeans from the Syrians, and a great day on which the dynasty of the Jews, who became the kings of Judea, celebrated their ascendancy to the throne. It became Israel's 4th of July. They had thrown off the yoke of the British, that is the Syrians, and established their own sovereignty. It was a great national holiday, a festival of independence, celebrated not only in the sanctuary, never in the home. And so it was celebrated for the first century or more. And then Judea's political conditions changed. The Romans spread throughout the Mediterranean basin. Theirs was an iron-booted rule, cruel, stern, and demanding. Judean independence was lost. There was heavy taxation. The young hotheads in the community reminded themselves what these lights symbolized, how Judean soldiers had fought with courage and bravery against overwhelming odds and had been victorious. God had helped them. Why shouldn't Judea and God do it again? From the spirit of Hanukkah emerged the terrible revolt of 6670, in which the Jews fought against the Romans for 4 bloody years, and the Bar Kokhba revolt, 132-135, in which another generation of Jews exhausted themselves against the Romans for 4 more years. Mount Sada, which many of you have visited, is testimony to the destruction that finally came to them. It was bloody and it was brutal. 1 in 6 Jews, over 1 million Jews, were killed in the 4 years between 66 and 70. Another 1 million Jews were killed in 3.5 years between 132 and 135. During those centuries, Jews were at their greatest peak ever in terms of numerical proportion to the rest of the world. They represented about 1 in 20, 5% of all the citizens of the Eastern Roman Empire. We were strong, we had independence, we felt powerful. Why not fight? And so fight they did. And they were brutally defeated and suppressed. Now what happens to the 4th of July in a conquered country? The 4th of July must change. It must not be a holiday when young hotheads continue to meet, to plan, and to be encouraged by ancient memories of derring do. Obviously, the prudent heads of the community will try to change the character of the 4th of July. The interest in Hanukkah as we have it in the Talmud is a testimony not to the victory of the Maccabees so much as to the defeat of the Judeans, to the defeat of the Jews during these two terrible revolts against Rome. After the destruction of the temple in the year 70, part of the price Jews had to pay for their defeat was the temple was plowed under, the land of the Temple Mount was salted by the Romans. Nothing should ever grow there again. Nothing should ever be built there again. The Jews had to take the entire temple-centered cult and diversify it. They could move it into the home or into the synagogue. They did not eradicate Hanukkah, but what they did was not to place Hanukkah in the synagogue, where it might have been celebrated in very much the same manner as before the loss of the temple, publicly, but to take it out of the liturgy entirely, to place it in the home, where a light would simply be a reminder of the great menorah of the temple, but not be the same thing. The Hanukkah menorah had 8 branches instead of 7. It fit the 8 days of the festival of rededication, associated Hanukkah not with the martial glory of the Maccabees, but with God's sole and single miracle, the miracle of a cruise of oil, which lasted for 8 days. It is God who saves. We do not read on Hanukkah as we read on Purim or at other times from a scroll of victory. What we do is to speak of God's will to save his people, to save mankind. We light these lights in memory and in anticipation of God's redemption. Hanukkah today represents again our desire to put behind us the patience and inaction of a generation of Jews who are willing to rise and to fight for their lives, willing to wait for God to save them. These lights are lit to celebrate the spirit of the Warsaw Ghetto and the pioneers and young soldiers who fought for Israel in 1948, 56, 67, 73, and this year. If we look at Hanukkah as it was historically observed, we recognize that Hanukkah is a paradoxical holiday. We must recognize that these lights suggest to us that there is a time to be active and a time to be patient. Just as will and courage and sacrifice have their place, so also do patience and steadfastness and perseverance. Whether it be an active or passive virtue, must be carried out with understanding and with moderation. And as at all times, there's a time for the Jew to take up arms, a time for the Jew, through diplomacy and statesmanship, to take up statesmanship. These are the reasons that we light these lights this day. Amen.